in your parents' dental office? Really? Mum's an oral surgeon besides, you know, said Hermione. They're set up for surgery and anesthesiology. It would have to be after hours, of course. Saturday morning, I think. Harry glanced around the coffee shop, then back at Hermione. You think? Well, it depends on Anne, doesn't it? Hermione pushed his untouched mug a fraction closer, bumping it against his hand so that he looked at it, sighed, then took a long drink. He placed the mug back on the table, still toying with the handle. And Anne is a muggle, but she's married to a wizard, so she knows all about magic. He tried to keep the displeasure from his voice about that, somehow unhappy that a non-magical woman knew all about magic long before he did. It certainly wasn't Dr. Jordan's fault. The only one to blame, if blame he needed, was Old Al. Old Al, despite what he knew now, he couldn't help the whimsical smile at the memory of the old man who, he knew now, had been Albus Dumbledore, the headmaster of Hogwarts. As I said, I went to see her yesterday with Ron's brother Bill. He was in school with her husband, at Hogwarts, I mean. All we told her was that an order member needed the surgery and that it would greatly help our cause. She's been personally affected. She was willing to do practically anything to help. She doesn't know it's me, then? He asked. He only reluctantly acknowledged that being Harry Potter actually meant something to these people. Will she be at the meeting tonight? I'd like to meet her. Hermione's mouth had done a curious downturn. Harry, she said, scooting a chair in closer to the table and glancing around the room. Ron hadn't been there to cast a muffliato, and she felt vulnerable. She leaned in until they were almost touching foreheads across the table and spoke very softly. Harry, the meeting tonight is for order members, people who have taken an oath of fealty. I'm not sure. No, I know you don't fully appreciate how, she faltered. Harry frowned and reached out for her hand. He squeezed it. It was unusual to see Hermione so emotional. No, Hermione, I think I understand. I just don't know who's who yet. Her grip on his hand increased. Harry, she whispered. People have died. Lots of people. Nearly everyone in the Order has lost someone. Someone close, important to them. We learned to be suspicious, to not trust anyone. She lowered her voice even more. The fact that Severus is willing to do this. Oh, Harry. Tears? There were tears in her eyes? It's because of that prophecy, said Harry. That's all. Her hand released his and her arms went around him. Thank you, Harry. Thank you for not running away from this. I know it's all so, so hard to believe. He pulled back and she put her hand on his shoulders. It was the same for me when I was 11, when I got my Hogwarts letter. Hermione. Only I was just 11, and it's so much easier to suspend disbelief when you're a child. And then there wasn't a war then, and there weren't all the expectations for me that there are for you. Hermione, stop. Harry gazed at her, half amazed at the emotion she was displaying, half confused as to its source. What's wrong? She seemed to get hold of herself. She pulled back her arms and rested them on the table in front of her, on either side of her cinnamon latte. Ollivander will be at the meeting tonight. You'll get your wand, and once you have your wand, there'll be no going back. The wand, well, it helps complete you, Harry. It will connect you irrevocably with your magic. If this isn't the life you want, if you don't think you can help fulfill the... Her voice lowered again. The prophecy. Now is the time to turn back. She warmed her hands against her mug, pursed her lips, then looked up at him again. I think you deserve to have the choice, a real choice, and after tonight there won't be a choice. She smiled, eyes sad and far away. I still remember how it felt to hold my wand for the first time. Harry looked at her, studied her face carefully. You're all over the place, Hermione. Whatever you have to say, just say it. She looked him in the eye and took a breath. This is your last chance to back out, Harry. I think someone should explain it to you, and not just take it for granted that you want this, that you want all of this. She smiled wistfully. Most of us grow into magic in the magical world from the bottom up. We're either born into magical families and a world with magic is all we ever know, or, like me, we discover the magical world when we're 10 or 11 years old and start at the bottom of the heap with everyone else at Hogwarts. But you, Harry, you're coming at it all sideways, aren't you? All grown up, mature, used to making your own decisions, right? But only after you know all the facts. He watched as her features took on a certain intensity, understanding her, but not understanding. And what facts, specifically, don't I know? he challenged her, trying to keep the edge he felt out of his voice. I know, I see how everyone is when they meet me. I see the hope in their eyes, and I've heard this prophecy, and I understand that they believe in it. We've nothing else to believe in anymore, said Hermione quietly. Her hand had made its way over to his again, and she squeezed it softly. Harry stared at her fingers as they covered his hand. In this moment, they were just two people having coffee in a coffee shop, two uni students, two ordinary people with ordinary lives. He took a deep breath and released it slowly. And I know more. I know how my parents died, Hermione. Minerva told me. Severus knew them too. And it just seems to me that if I can help somehow, well, I should. For them. If this prophecy is really about me, I can pitch in and help you all figure out a way to take him down. I'm just one person, but I'm willing to try. Hermione was shaking her head. She closed her eyes and gripped his hand more tightly. Harry, either you're in or you're out. If you go to this order meeting tonight and decide it's not for you, you'll be obliviated and taken back to your flat none the wiser. Oblivi-what? He asked, frowning. It's a memory charm. It will make you forget all you've learned about the magical world. But if you come tonight and you join the order, you won't just be pitching in. Hermione caught and held his eyes, speaking carefully. I'm not sure you fully understand the prophecy, Harry. The one with the power to vanquish the Dark Lord approaches, said Harry. He sighed. You probably mean this part, and either must die at the hand of the other, for neither can live while the other survives. Right, Hermione said. Her hand trembled, even though she willed it to still. That's the part. It's not about pitching in, Harry. It's about being the one. It says the one with the power to vanquish. Hermione stared him down. What about either must die at the hand of the other? Harry shrugged. You don't take it literally, do you? Yes, actually, she said. We do. She picked up her mug and drank, hiding whatever the look that flitted across her face. He stared at her a long moment without speaking, trying to read her face. Finally, he said, Let me get this right. You expect me to kill him. Aren't you glad we're having this discussion before tonight? She said. He leaned in closer. Were there tears in her eyes? Yeah, I'm glad. Hermione? She wiped at her eyes with the back of her hand. Hermione, listen to me. You're saying it's not enough to help capture him. Say, help get him locked up in prison for the rest of his life? Look, Harry, we've heard all about the Dark Lord, but you don't understand. There's only one way to defeat him. One. He won't stay locked up in prison. I can't kill him. It was that simple, wasn't it? What am I supposed to do? Strangle him? Shoot him? Sneak up on him and smother him with a pillow? Harry! Harry! Listen to me! Hermione was earnestly trying to get his attention. You're so new to this. You're not thinking like a wizard. We're going to kill him, no matter what it takes, but until you showed up, we never even considered the prophecy could be used to defeat him. Not with you dead. If you decided to stay, know that Severus will figure this out. He's brilliant, really. He'd never expect you to stand up alone in front of the Dark Lord, but somehow, we know that you're the key. He stared at her, watching her mouth move, trying to comprehend exactly what she was saying. And everyone expects that as soon as you have your wand in your hand tonight, it will all fall into place. You'll get it. You'll be complete. Your magic will have a focus. And honestly, I believe that too. I just thought you should have a chance to reconsider before that happens. Before there's no going back. I can't choose to be an ordinary wizard, he asked. His mind was trying to process everything Hermione was saying. It had all been happening fast. Very fast. And while nothing she had said in these past few minutes really shocked him, it was the first time anyone had strung it together quite like that. Neville Longbottom tried, was her sage reply. All he ever wanted to be was an ordinary wizard. Neville, he repeated. He licked his dry lips. Minerva talked about him. The other child the prophecy could have referred to. The Dark Lord killed him during our fifth year. She could say it now with steady voice, testament to how much had happened since then. You want me to back out, don't you? He asked after a minute spent staring into his cooling coffee. You're making it sound like there's no hope, like I'll end up dead. He lowered his voice, though it wasn't clear, even to him, if it was out of fear or out of respect. Like Neville. Oh, God, no! She gave a choked sort of laugh. If I got to pick what I wanted, you'd get your want tonight and join the Order, and we'd start working together, all of us in the Order, to figure out how to take him down, for good this time. And we'd train you. Severus is a master, Harry. He's brilliant, as a strategist and with a wand. Harry, despite the seriousness of the conversation, grinned into his mug at the double entendre. Harry, you'd never be alone, ever. You might be the key to destroying him, but not one of us would set you alone against him and run for cover. Being a wizard, being a member of the Order of the Phoenix, Harry, that's about family. We're all in it together. Her voice rose as she grew more impassioned. I know I'm not making much sense. I tell you it's all or nothing, that if you come tonight and get a wand, you're in it for good or ill. I tell you all the wonderful things about our world, then make sure you understand exactly what the prophecy means. But it's because I want you to have a choice. You can fall back into the Muggle world. Severus would take it hard. We all would. But he'd let you go no matter what anyone else said. I know he would. But I didn't think you understood what would happen when you were at that meeting tonight, with a wand, your wand, in your hand. The choice has to be now, Harry, not then. Harry was frowning, putting something else together. His head was clearer now, about magic and his choices, sitting in this ordinary cafe with a woman who had once been an ordinary muggle like him. So the surgery, he began. The offer to cure me. He stretched out his bad leg. To fix my leg. He looked at her expectantly. Her frown deepened a moment, then her face relaxed and she smiled and shook her head. Oh, Harry, no. It's not about building a better soldier. It's not even about coaxing you to join us. Not really. Not at all. If you want to go through with it, you'll at least have that, even without joining up with us. A functional leg, pain-free days. Everyone deserves that. Everyone who can have it, anyway. You don't have to have a wand to have magic inside you. You know that. Just having the magic in you will mean the magical procedures they've outlined will work. So the deal-breaker is the wand itself, then, he said. I can't have that and walk away with it. Harry, you don't understand, said Hermione with a knowing smile. It's not that you can't. You just won't. Having a wand, then not being able to use it, it's like losing a limb, Harry, she said. She sounded sad, but there was a strength about her and a determination that told him she really believed this was temporary, that Voldemort would be defeated and she'd once again be able to use magic when she wanted. He turned it over in his mind, then nodded at Hermione. I understand what you're doing, Hermione, and I appreciate it, I do. I'm not sure that I believe it altogether, not all of it anyway, not yet. So you're going tonight, and you're going to meet Ollivander and get a wand. And you're aware that with that wand in your hand, you aren't likely to go back to this life. Harry sighed. I'm not too attached to it yet, am I? He said. I'm signed up for classes next month, but they haven't even started yet. He smiled at her. Let's just see what happens tonight, Hermione. You've warned me. I've taken it into consideration. I appreciate it. I do. And, Harry? He shook his head. And I won't tell Severus we had this conversation, all right? She smiled. Thanks. It's for the best, really. He smiled. Good. And speaking of Severus... Harry Potter sat in a dusty chair in Severus's library office, waiting. Ron and Hermione waited across from him on a two-seated sofa. The meeting had started already. It was 7:30 in the evening, and the footsteps had stopped pounding and echoing down the corridor outside the library door 20 minutes ago. Harry checked his wristwatch. Just a few more minutes, said Hermione. They've got to get through everyone's reports. Severus is always last. They waited 10 more minutes before one of the Weasley twins opened the door. Well, Snape's got them all pretty much calmed down, he grinned at Harry. Come on, then. Everyone wants to get a look at you. Be prepared for a lot of crying, Harry. He stood up nervously, and Ron and Hermione stood too. The twin left, and Harry took a deep breath. How many are there? Usually about 20, answered Hermione. Not everyone comes to every meeting. And don't get freaked out by Mad-Eye, added Ron. He's got a wooden leg and a magical eye. He looks pretty gruesome, too. All right, Mad-Eye. Anyone else I should watch out for? Well, Mum, said Ron with a grin, she's going to hug you to death. An hour and a half later, Harry was sitting at the enormous plank table in the long, narrow kitchen. Even though Severus had ended the meeting nearly half an hour ago, he'd only just succeeded in emptying the room. Harry was exhausted. He reached for the glass of fire whiskey Severus placed in front of him and looked up at the small man with the silver eyes gazing at him from across the table. "Mr. Harry Potter," said Ollivander, the wand maker. He had settled at the table directly across from Harry while Harry was resting his head in his hands, after receiving a final hug from Mrs. Weasley and a hard pat on the shoulder from Mad-Eye Moody following the admonition, "Constant vigilance, Harry, constant vigilance." The wand maker had arranged a stack of long boxes on the table beside him. Severus settled silently on the bench next to Ollivander. He too had a glass of fire whiskey. He took a drink and placed a glass on the table at his left elbow. His eyes slid from the pile of boxes to the man who had crafted the wands inside. Ollivander still operated his shop on Diagon Alley. He was heavily regulated now, his inventory tightly controlled. It was forbidden to sell a wand to anyone who didn't have a permit from the Ministry to purchase one. He had taken a great risk to be here tonight, and to bring this large a selection of wands with him. Harry took another long drink of fire whiskey, then nodded to Ollivander. "All right, then. I'm ready. What do I do?" Ollivander smiled, and Severus could see that the old man was regarding Harry intently. He stared at Harry, and Harry stared back. "Yes, this one." The man moved exceedingly quickly. He had extracted a long box from the middle of the stack, removed the lid, and extended the wand inside to Harry, handle first. Harry took it and looked at it for a minute, frowning, then handed it back to Ollivander. "This one's not right," he said. Ollivander and Severus exchanged a look. "We move on, then." Ollivander took the wand back from Harry, placed it back in its box, then stared at the stack and plucked out another box. "This time, try a swish and a flick," he said. He demonstrated the movement with the wand in hand, and blue sparks shot out. Harry glanced at Severus, but took the wand. He frowned as he held it. "That one's not right," began Severus, but Harry swished it to the side, then gave it a little flick. Purple smoke issued from the tip. It smelled sulfuric. Ollivander coughed. "It's too heavy," said Harry. He looked at Ollivander apologetically, but the man seemed more excited than he had even at the beginning. "Certainly, certainly," said Ollivander. He handed the rejected wand to Severus and pushed its box toward him, then fished into his pile and pulled out another wand. With Severus engaged to sort out the rejected wands, the trials went even more quickly. Harry tried each gamely, even when it was obvious from his face each time he held one that it didn't feel quite right to him. "The only wand I've ever used is yours, Severus," he said, during a break when Ollivander was fishing out into a bag under the table and piling more boxes on top. "And it worked better for me than all of these I've tried." Ollivander poked his head up at that. "Patience. I know what we need now, Mr. Potter." He ignored the first pile of boxes now, and oddly the second as well. Instead, he rooted around below the table and came up with three more boxes, which he lined up in the middle of the table. Breaking his previous pattern, he removed the lid from each box and left the wands in them. "Choose," said Ollivander. "Or better said, allow one to choose you." Harry leaned in, just as Severus did. One wand reminded him very much of Severus's, long, sleekly polished, dark wood. It seemed a quiet wand to Harry, quiet and powerful. Next to it was a beautifully made maple wand, long and supple, with a handle with intricate fine carvings. The last wand was slightly longer than the other two, unremarkable in color, style, or ornamentation. Harry reached out. His hand hovered over the boxes, then lowered and closed over the last wand. "Ah!" Ollivander clapped his hands. Severus stared as Harry gave the wand a swish and flick, sending a cascade of silver and gold sparks from its tip. Harry smiled. Genuine, authentic, beautiful. His face lit up and he beamed at Severus. "This one," he said, gripping the handle tightly. "This is my wand. 11 inches, holly, phoenix feather core," said Ollivander. "A special wand. A wand that has been sitting on my shelf for a good many years." "Why would no one else choose it?" asked Harry, rolling the wand in his hands, feeling it, learning it. He knew, he absolutely knew, that he could not easily relinquish it now. He grasped the handle again and gave another swish, smiling when red and green sparks flew out this time. "It's Christmas," he said, giving Severus a pleased smile. "Mr. Potter, you don't understand." Mr. Ollivander was packing up the rejected wands. "A wizard doesn't choose a wand." He looked across at Harry, and Harry saw that Severus too was staring at him. "A wand chooses a wizard." "Well, why did this one choose me, then?" asked Harry. "There's something special about that wand, isn't there?" asked Severus, staring at the box that had held the wand. Indeed, there is, answered Ollivander, nodding. The phoenix that gave its tail feather for this wand gave precisely one other feather for one other wand. That phoenix belonged to Albus Dumbledore. Fox, murmured Severus. Fox, Albus Dumbledore's phoenix, had not been seen since Dumbledore's death. Who has the other wand? He asked, lowering his voice even though they were alone in the room in the most protected home in London. Ollivander looked at Harry rather than Severus. Harry found his silver gaze unsettling. The Dark Lord himself, he answered at last. He leaned across the table and brushed the fringe off Harry's forehead, exposing the scar. It is the wand that gave you that scar, in fact. How odd that its brother has chosen you. Harry's grip on his new wand tightened. The Dark Lord owns this wand's brother. Yes, indeed. Quite extraordinary, don't you agree? What does that mean? Asked Harry. His eyes flicked from Ollivander to Severus, and he frowned. Severus? I don't know, Severus answered. He looked. Harry couldn't decide how he looked. Interested? Definitely interested. Not upset, but not exactly happy. But then he smiled, and his smile was genuine. Harry shook off the vague feeling of disquiet Severus' expression had given him. He grinned. You'll teach me how to use it, won't you? He asked.
I will be one of your teachers, answered Severus with a quick smile.
He nodded at the wandmaker.
Thank you, Ollivander. Perhaps the issue of the brother wand can remain our secret.
Of course, answered Ollivander. Harry, let's see. Oh, beautiful. Holly, right? What's the core? Phoenix feather, said Harry, smiling at Sirius, flicking the wand again. He glanced at Severus, correctly interpreting the unspoken message on his face. He didn't mention the wand's brother. You're holding it just right. Feels natural, doesn't it? Sirius smiled brightly at Harry. I still remember holding my wand for the first time.
We all do, said Ollivander. The pairing of a witch or wizard with their wand is a seminal event in a witch or wizard's life.
Try something simple, Harry. Sirius had his own wand in his hand. Try a Lumos. He flicked his wand, and the tip glowed brightly.
You didn't say anything, said Harry, staring at the wand tip. Non-verbal, said Severus, shaking his head at Sirius. Had you been at Hogwarts, Harry, you'd have had 5 years of schooling before learning to cast non-verbally.
He flicked his wrist, and his wand slid down into his hand.
Lumos.
Harry repeated the movement and the incantation, smiling broadly when the tip of his own wand lit up. The glow was not as bright as Sirius's, nor as unwavering as Severus's, but it was enough to please Harry.
I'll never need to buy batteries again, he muttered, pointing the wand at a dark corner of the ceiling.
There are 100 variants of the spell, said Sirius. He was shining his wand into the same corner, but his light was focused, like a muggle torch. You'll learn quickly, Harry. How do I put it out? Harry asked. He reached tentatively toward the wand tip with his left hand, testing to see if it was hot.
The counterspell is Nox, said Severus.
Sirius was laughing. You can't snuff out the end like a candle, and it's not hot. It's perfectly safe to stick it back inside your pocket.
Nox, said Harry, shaking his wand a bit for good measure. The light went out immediately. That's enough for tonight, said Severus.
Harry glanced at him, eyes still shining with the glow of discovery.
I need to see you in my office, Harry. Alone.
Sirius pouted. You can't give a boy a new wand and then stop him with just one spell, Snape. Let me take him out back into the garden and teach him a few jinxes.
You're impossible, Sirius, really.
Remus had been standing quietly against the wall beside the door. He stepped inside and rested a hand on Harry's shoulder.
Go on with Severus. I'll keep your godfather entertained.
Harry grinned. Shouldn't be too hard. Just dangle some string in front of him. Sirius laughed and cuffed Harry on the shoulder, then gave him a one-armed hug for good measure. Harry followed Severus up the stairs, taking his time and making sure the cane was fully seated on the stair above him before stepping up. They walked down the corridor into the shadowy office where he had waited earlier with Ron and Hermione. He eyed the sofa, but Severus walked tiredly to his own chair behind his desk and sat, motioning for Harry to sit in the chair where he'd waited earlier. Harry frowned, but settled into the chair nonetheless. He leaned his cane against the desk and looked at Severus expectantly.
Do you plan to return to school?
Severus asked, hands resting on the desk, a wand beneath them.
To Uni?
Severus nodded and waited. Harry smiled. Are you planning to make me a better offer? He teased.
Severus raised an eyebrow. Harry, because I wouldn't mind spending more time with you, Harry blurted out. I'm just not sure what comes next.
We talk, answered Severus. We plan.
He sighed, and his angular face took on a look that Harry could only describe as resigned.
We set priorities, Harry.
You mean about us, said Harry, understanding.
I mean about us, confirmed Severus. You do not, cannot understand how the Wizarding World would see this relationship. I am not Albus Dumbledore. I do not have the love of the Wizarding World to fall back on, Harry. And as the leader of the Order of the Phoenix, as a man your parents' age, I will be suspected of taking advantage of you, your fame, your newness in the magical world.
So this isn't about taking care of this Vault Dark Lord first and then getting on with our lives? Asked Harry. He scooted his chair closer to the desk so he could lean his elbows on it, then reached out and touched the back of Severus's hand.
This is about what people will think of us? Severus shook his head. I do not care what others think. For years, my life has been devoted to one thing and one thing only, the eradication of the Dark Lord. I cannot afford distractions. We, the Order of the Phoenix, cannot afford them.
Harry stared at Severus's hands on the desk, then looked up at his face. I liked you before I knew about magic. I was intrigued by you before I found out you knew my parents. I understand now that you needed me for more than you. But that doesn't change how I feel about you, Severus. You're part of this world. I want to get to know you better, too.
You will discover many new things in this world, said Severus. You may quickly find others who interest you more.
Harry pushed back away from the desk as he spoke, leaning back in his chair, eyes still intent on Severus.
I might, Harry shrugged. I might not. Are you trying to talk me out of liking you?
They held each other's gaze for a drawn-out moment, then Harry shrugged again. All right, we take it slow. I'm fine with that, but slow doesn't mean nothing. Slow doesn't mean we stop altogether while I get up to speed on my magic. The corner of Severus's mouth twitched. Harry had already learned that that was as good a smile from Severus. He grinned. So, aside from us, what's next?
We have to pack 7 years of magical education into a few months, no more, answered Severus. You will have only the best the Order has to offer. Would you consider giving up Uni? You will have many more options in a free wizarding world once the Dark Lord is gone.
I'll take a medical leave this coming term, said Harry. He found it much easier to commit to than he'd have thought, turning his back, even temporarily, on the course in life he'd worked so hard to start on following his injury. Severus nodded. Harry thought he looked relieved.
Your leg first, then. This Saturday.
This Saturday? Harry shifted, placing his hand on his injured leg, looking at it, then back at Severus. That soon?
There is no reason to wait. Once the plate and screws have been removed, you will travel by portkey from the Granger's office back here. Poppy will begin the medical treatment immediately to regrow your hip and femur and the connective tissues. Expect to be in bed here for 2 days, followed by a week of therapy to retrain the muscles in your leg. Your training will begin a week from Monday.
Harry stared again. Stared hard. Hip and femur regrowth and on his feet in 2 days? He shook his head. So I have 2 days left to let this all sink in? He asked. Severus gave a tight smile.
No, we cannot afford to waste even 2 days. Hermione's agreed to begin with you tomorrow, here in the library. An introduction to the magical world.
Harry brightened. So I'll see you then. You live here, right?
Severus nodded. I live here, yes.
They eyed each other, and Harry's eyes rose to the ceiling.
And yes, my bedroom is upstairs, directly across from your godfather's.
He nearly smiled at the look on Harry's face.
But I have a rather important mission to plan and carry out before Saturday. I doubt our paths will cross until then.
Mission? Asked Harry curiously.
Yes, answered Severus, sighing. I have to visit an old friend.
A lone figure hurried towards the gates of Hogwarts. It was Friday evening, and Minerva had met her friend Rosmerta for drinks at the Three Broomsticks, as was her custom on summer weekends. A cold chill started to creep over her, and Minerva frowned, looking up as one of the horrid Ministry Dementors passed by far overhead. "Awful things," she muttered, taking out her wand as she pushed open the gate, ready with an expecto patronum should the vile things forget their instructions and come at her with a soul-sucking intent. She waited a breath or two, looking up as another Dementor passed overhead, then pushed the gate closed behind her. She hurried forward toward the castle door, frowning at the man she could now see waiting on the stairs. Filch.
Nosy busybody, she muttered, but kept up her pace. She nodded to him briskly as she approached.
Argus, she said, voice tight.
And mistress, he said. He pointed skyward. They're thick tonight. Something stirred them up.
I noticed, she said. Perhaps you could stay here and watch for trouble. Please alert me if I need to call someone.
She pushed open the castle door, then turned to face him again. Do you need a companion?
Filch scowled at her offer.
They'll leave me be.
Minerva frowned and continued on her way, not stopping until she had reached her rooms.
That was unpleasant, she said. You'd best hurry. The Dementors are on alert, and Filch is suspicious.
Severus Snape had pulled off the invisibility cloak and stood there in Minerva's small parlour, holding a rather large picture frame against his chest.
I'll just be on my rounds, then. I'm late as it is, she said. 20 minutes. Then I'm escorting you out.
She glared at him, but with more worry than anger, and quickly left the room while Severus collapsed onto the sofa, propping the portrait of Albus Dumbledore from Grimald Place onto the table. He fervently hoped that the magical portrait of Albus in the headmaster's office could visit it now that it was inside the castle. Severus might not be able to get into the headmaster's office to speak to Albus's portrait, but he could very possibly get Albus to come to him now that he was in the castle.
Albus, he whispered. Albus, at once. We have very little time.
The still man on the chair behind the desk started to fade, ghost-like. When he had disappeared completely, Albus Dumbledore hurried in from the door behind the desk. He looked around at the portrait room, startled, then finally looked at Severus.
Severus! At last! How did you...
Severus, what is wrong? What has happened? How long has it... Severus did not allow himself the emotion that welled up beneath his skin, behind his eyes, at the sight of Albus Dumbledore, portrait or not. He had very little time.
4 years. Voldemort has taken the Ministry and Hogwarts. Albus, we have found Harry Potter. Explain.
The portrait's painted mouth dropped open in a look Severus Snape had never before seen on the old man's face. Surprise. Shock, even.
Don't try to tell me he's dead, Albus. He is alive. He told us about old Al. Explain.
He repeated the demand, fingers gripping the edge of the frame, knuckles white.
4 years? And you have just found him now?
Now Severus's mouth dropped open.
What do you mean, just now? How could we have found him, Albus? We thought him dead. You told the entire wizarding world, that he was dead.
Albus Dumbledore approached the front of his portrait, staring at Severus.
Severus? Severus? Tell me you did view the memory I left you, in the usual place.
Severus's face fell. It was grey, shocked. He had not thought... He had never once considered that Albus had left him a message.
Albus, he said, his voice no more than a whisper. Things did not go as planned. This is my first time back inside Hogwarts since you died.
He could trust no one with the secret. Not yet, not until he himself had time to think, to research, to understand, to discover in a matter of months in a way, any way, to know, to be certain if what Albus suspected was true. What Albus Dumbledore, brilliant, gifted wizard, had not found in the 8 years that remained of his life when he had discovered that little Harry Potter was a Parselmouth.
Horcruxes.
Albus had identified in a stride 5 Horcruxes, a diary, a cup, a diadem, a locket, a ring. He'd guessed, rightly, Severus felt, that Voldemort's pet snake Nagini was the 6th. He suspected that Harry Potter himself was another. And in those years, Albus had discovered a way to destroy the Horcruxes, but never a way to destroy the fragment of soul without destroying the object it was attached to. Albus had left him a memory, had had the foresight to explain in that memory what a Horcrux was, how it could be destroyed, and why he had chosen to let the 8-year-old Harry Potter, receptacle of 1/8 of Voldemort's soul, continue his life as a muggle.
He was just a boy, Severus, a boy, an innocent. I could not sacrifice him. Not then. I tried to find a way to kill the soul fragment, yet preserve the vessel. I looked. I researched until the very end, Severus. I found and destroyed five. Five! But each time the vessel was destroyed with the soul fragment. The Horcrux is not the soul, and it is not the vessel. It is the combination of the two. So I left the task to you. I believed you could succeed where I had failed. I explained it all, told you what I knew about Harry, where he might be found when the time was right. But Albus had not trusted him while he was alive. He had thought that Severus, that the entire Order, would do anything to end Voldemort's regime. He had believed they would sacrifice a child, that they would not have wanted to wait to find another way. For the greater good.
He is a parcel-mouth, Severus. When I discovered this, I had already found and destroyed the first Horcrux, and was well on the way to finding the ring. The ring, a relic of Salazar Slytherin himself. The pieces began to fall together. The boy shared the trait of the Slytherin founder himself, a trait so rare that it could only have come from Tom Riddle, and the only connection the boy has with Tom is a scar. It was all I could do, Severus. I could not destroy the child, and could not discover any way to separate the Horcrux from the boy without killing him in the process. Severus, he was just a boy, a small boy, with his father's messy hair and his mother's beautiful eyes.
He had left Albus's portrait with Minerva, shrunken and tucked away in a warded drawer, and given Minerva the task of satisfying his curiosity about the state of the wizarding world and the school he so loved. The headmaster's office had been sealed since Dumbledore's death, and Minerva governed from her old office. No one entered that office, not even Voldemort. No one had broken through the wards. The portraits could not leave the castle and spent most of their time, Albus said, snoring in their frames.
"Are you coming down to dinner?"
Severus looked up to find Harry at his door. It was Wednesday, less than a week since he'd made his visit to Hogwarts, 4 days since Harry had started his treatment, and already he was out of bed and walking without his cane. He was being cautious still, but already seemed like a different man. Back to his former self, Severus imagined. The man who dreamed of a career in the RAF. The man who wanted to fly. The surgery had gone extremely well, and Harry had been back at Grimald Place with his first dose of Skelligro by noon on Saturday. Severus shook his head. He gestured toward the pile of old tomes at his left elbow.
Research. How did things go with Minerva?
Harry stepped into the room and pushed the door closed behind him.
I wish I'd taken Latin in school, he said with a smile.
He walked over behind Severus and rested his hands on his shoulders, rubbing them and wincing.
You need to get up and stretch more often, Severus, and eat a real meal from time to time.
Severus allowed the shoulder rub, stretching his neck to the side so Harry could work out the knot there.
The training?
Oh, great. She's calling it first-year transfiguration in a week. I turned a match into a needle, beetles into buttons, and a sock into a pincushion. You know, useful stuff. Might need a needle sometime to sew my beetle back on.
And charms.
Severus let the quill drop from his hands as Harry worked on a particularly tight muscle.
I learned Axio, Harry said. Dead useful. I may never get out of my chair again.
We're going to skip herbology and potions, said Severus. I've given it quite a bit of thought. Potions is my own specialty, but I can't see that it's needed now. Once you get the basics from Minerva and Hermione, Mad-Eye and Sirius will take you through the paces on defense. I will teach you how to apparate myself and to cast Patronus.
I was actually hoping you'd teach me to fly, said Harry.
One hand continued to rub Severus's shoulder, but the other had worked its way around Severus's neck and trailed down onto his chest.
Harry,
I'm feeling better than I have in 2 years, Severus, thanks to you and your magical world. Humor me.
There were lips on his neck now, and both arms were around him. He bit back a groan as Harry's mouth moved across his jawline, then gave it up and turned to meet that mouth in an open-mouthed kiss. Harry's fingers grazed over his nipple, and he pulled the boy even closer, sucking his bottom lip into his mouth as his fingers pressed into the back of Harry's neck.
"Your godfather will teach you to fly,"
he whispered, releasing Harry and gently pushing him away as he turned back to his research.
"Or one of the Weasleys."
Harry grinned, pleased with the small concession Severus had made in allowing the kiss.
"Ron says you can fly without a broom," he said.
"Ron should keep his mouth shut," answered Severus.
"So you were a Death Eater?"
Harry stood behind Severus, fingers working his shoulders once again. "But then you started to spy for Dumbledore, and when he was killed, you took over the Order."
"Mr. Weasley is a veritable font of information," groused Severus. "All of this is well known, documented, and accepted. I was young. I saw the error of my ways."
It wasn't Ron, said Harry. Sirius told me, and Remus. Well, Remus corrected him a lot. He worked his fingers up against Severus's scalp. Why does no one else know those two are together?
They told you?
Severus turned his head, looking back at Harry in surprise. No, they didn't have to tell me. It was obvious when I met them. I asked, though, and they didn't deny it. I wondered if either of them had dated you.
Severus gave Harry a death glare over his shoulder. You will never mention that again, he said.
He sighed and reached for the top book on the stack at his elbow. What are you reading? Harry asked, coming around Severus and half sitting on the desk. It looks old.
It is old, Severus replied.
He looked from the book to Harry and back at the book again.
I am trying to solve a puzzle.
I like puzzles. Severus stared at him, seeming to come to a decision. Go on as he had been, on his own, or trust this matter to the one it affected most. He snapped the book shut and pushed back from his desk, rotating the chair to face Harry and locking eyes with him.
Then perhaps you can explain to me why your old Al made the Wizarding World believe that the child of the prophecy, the one destined to destroy the Dark Lord, was dead when he was, in fact, going about life in the middle of London.
He couldn't have predicted Harry's reaction. Harry smiled, almost wistfully. Maybe he just wanted me to be a kid, he said. He loved coming to the park and watching us play. He taught us to play marbles and conkers. One day he brought a yo-yo and showed us all these tricks.
Albus Dumbledore was the leader of the Order of the Phoenix, Severus said with a sigh.
What? You can't see him playing with a yo-yo?
Oh, I can very easily see him playing with a yo-yo.
They stared at each other, Harry's mouth twitching with a grin. I know what you mean, really, said Harry at last. Severus stood then, walked to the door and leant against it, with both hands pressed flat on the wood. He muttered something in Latin, and the wood glowed beneath his hands.
What I am about to tell you must remain between us, Severus said, turning and leaning against the door. Sit, please.
He motioned to the love seat, and Harry sank down onto it, looking expectantly up at Severus. All right, what is it? Severus returned to his chair and once again picked up the thin book. He held it as he spoke to Harry.
I had the opportunity on Friday to have a conversation with Albus Dumbledore through his portrait.
By now, Harry understood the concept of animated portraits.
I discovered that Albus left a memory for me to view after his death, a memory that explained that you were alive, and that told me how to find you. But I never saw the memory, and I...
Saw the memory? Interrupted Harry. How can you see a memory? Severus sighed.
Wizards can extract memories from their brains, and others can view these memories, immerse themselves in the memory world, so to speak. But the important thing to understand is that I never saw the memory Albus left for me. I fled Hogwarts the night he was killed and never returned.
Severus stood again, placing the small tome thoughtfully on his desk, then sank down onto the low, squashy sofa beside Harry. Harry turned to face him, looking a bit perplexed as Severus continued.
Albus did not plan to remove you forever from the Wizarding World, Harry. He discovered something about you when you were small, something he hadn't known or suspected, something that changed his plans. He left you in the Muggle World, hiding your magical heritage from you, but with every intention of bringing you back at a point when he had the information he needed, and you were old enough to make a rational decision on your own. The problem is...
He paused, looking over the book yet again.
The problem is that I was not privy to this information until Friday, and by then you had already joined us.
Are you afraid that I'd have made a different decision if I'd known? Asked Harry, placing one hand lightly on top of Severus's. Their joined hands remained together, on Severus's thigh, as Severus gathered his thoughts and his courage. Finally, he turned his hand over beneath Harry's, grasping the younger man's hand and entwining their fingers. Must be pretty bad, said Harry, staring at their hands.
When Voldemort tried to kill you when you were a baby, he intended to create a Horcrux with the murder.
Severus spoke without looking at Harry, staring instead at Harry's hand atop his.
Horcrux.
Now Severus did look up, looking at Harry's unfathomable dark eyes.
A magical object so dark that few wizards even know what it is.
Harry raised an eyebrow. He hadn't been in the Wizarding World long enough to be truly fearful, and now looked more curious than afraid.
What does it do?
Holds a splintered fragment of a person's soul.
Soul?
Harry's mouth twitched. He looked like he wanted to smile.
You're kidding, right?
Harry's face fell as Severus looked long at him. Severus was not kidding.
But a soul, Severus? Like a magical soul or something?
Is that where magic comes from?
His mouth fell open slightly as Severus squeezed his hand a bit harder.
Wait, you're serious?
Souls are real?
Souls are real, confirmed Severus, silently cursing Albus for dropping what amounted to a cynical muggle in the middle of the order. Our souls anchor us to life, to this world, and leave us when we die. Without our souls, we are not human. We exist while we continue to breathe, but it is an empty existence. The Dark Lord, Voldemort, is obsessed with his immortality and seeks to live forever. On Friday, Albus Dumbledore explained to me what Voldemort has done to remain alive. He has splintered his soul into multiple pieces, storing each in a precious object of his choosing. Should his mortal body be destroyed, his soul will remain on Earth so long as one of those fragments remains. When the killing curse rebounded from you and struck him, it destroyed his body, but not his soul, as he had other pieces hidden in his horcruxes. He was eventually able to regain a body, to be reborn with the help of his followers. Severus reached forward with his hand, hesitating before using a thumb to brush the shock of Harry's messy hair back from his forehead, exposing the lightning bolt scar. His hand dropped heavily to his side and Harry's hair fell back into his eyes.
"You're starting to scare me," said Harry. He pushed his hair back in an exasperated gesture.
Severus took a deep breath, released it slowly, and began to explain. While Severus had known, intellectually, what a Horcrux was, the reality of one's existence was still new to him. Harry could sense his discomfort with the topic as Severus explained how Voldemort had created 6 Horcruxes intentionally, splintering and fragmenting his soul with each successive murder and Horcrux to such an extent that his humanity, when he returned, was as compromised and twisted as his soul had become. Harry stared at Severus. He had no trouble making the leap.
"He thinks I'm one, too," he said, shaking his head in disbelief.
"Old Owl heard me talking to that snake and decided I had someone else's soul in me." He laughed, but it was a harsh and bitter laugh, then dropped his head into his hands and bit back what sounded like a strangled sob.
"I should have known this was too good to be true."
"We don't know it to be true," said Severus. "It is conjecture. The most logical explanation, perhaps, for your Parseltongue abilities, but not a proven fact. There is simply no precedent for a human Horcrux. I don't know what I'm looking for."
He strode angrily to his desk and started slapping each book in turn onto its surface in a new pile beside the first. He had Harry's attention now.
"This changes nothing, Harry," he said, his voice softer, nearly a plea.
"I've just gotten my life back," Harry said, smiling a bit sadly. He stretched his leg out before him, looking at it wistfully. "I'm not going to off myself just to kill this thing that might or might not be in me so you can get rid of this madman."
He paused, looking at Severus's stack of books like he very much wanted to sweep it off the desk and onto the floor. He took a deep breath.
"And it's not. In me, I mean. I think I'd know."
He tried to force a smile on his face, but it faltered as he caught Severus's eye.
"You didn't think your soul was real," thought Severus. "How would you recognize that anything was amiss with it?"
"Albus Dumbledore is wrong," Severus said aloud. He had been wrong to share this with Harry, he knew now. He would go on as he always had. They all would. He opened a drawer and began piling the books inside, then slammed the door shut. He looked at Harry and forced a tight smile.
"You are right, Harry. You would know."
But he wasn't convinced. Not really. The only known Parselmouth alive besides Harry Potter was Voldemort himself, a direct descendant of Salazar Slytherin himself, and that seemed an enormous coincidence. Harry stood, smiled wanly at Severus, and walked toward the door, but it was warded and would not open even though he rattled the knob in frustration.
"Wait."
Severus came toward him, unable to let Harry leave like this. Harry looked upset, frustrated, angry, slightly ill. Like he had every intent of throwing things against a wall or taking residence in a pub for the evening and drowning his sorrows in a pint too many.
"Harry."
Severus pressed up against him, wanting to comfort him, giving in once more to the temptation of their mutual attraction. Harry groaned as Severus rocked against him, and Severus let his building frustration at the entire hopeless situation find an outlet in the very real body against him, and in the sweet-tasting mouth that met his hungrily. When he felt Harry's erection against his hip, he reached down between them, grasping the hard prick through Harry's trousers, watching Harry bite his bottom lip, throw his head back against the door, squeeze his eyes shut tightly. 2 minutes, three, and Harry was rutting against him. 3 perfect, glorious minutes more, of watching Harry's face and body move to the precipice of his release, and Harry was shuddering through orgasm as Severus bit into his shoulder.
"Scutify," Severus said once he'd caught his breath.
Harry stiffened beneath him in surprise, then sagged as he realized what had happened.
"Almost as useful as Axio," he said, voice low and breathy.
"You'll get used to it," promised Severus.
Harry grinned. He wrapped his arms around Severus's neck and sighed.
"To magic," clarified Severus.
"Whatever," said Harry. He pressed a kiss to the corner of Severus's mouth and slipped out of the room. The post-orgasmic languid feeling did not last forever. Instead, the new word pounded around in his head.
"Horcrux. Horcrux. Horcrux."
As he showered, the pulse of the water drawing out the rhythm of the strange new word.
"Horcrux. Horcrux. Horcrux."
As he played chess with Ron, always a futile venture, and tried to listen to the advice of his pieces, they were always uncooperative for him, and seemed to want Ron to win.
"Horcrux. Horcrux. Horcrux."
It throbbed in his brain when he lay down to sleep, and pressing a pillow over his head did nothing to make it stop. It did get better. He fought with it enough mentally, was hyper-aware of his every behavior. He had been totally immersed in the wizarding world of the Order of the Phoenix for 2 weeks, and had learned that nearly everything he'd thought impossible was not really impossible at all. His leg, for instance, right as rain, as strong as it had been before the accident and already nearly pain-free. Ghosts and ghouls and goblins and unicorns and dogs with two tails and human beings who could turn into animals. Animagi. Sirius. Minerva. Harry's own dad. Severus had been right about the memories. He'd extracted a strand of something from his head. It looked the way Harry imagined a strand of cloud might look, and had shown Harry how to dip his face down until his nose touched the almost surface of the memory cloud. And he'd fallen slowly through nothingness and landed on a playground, where a little girl with red hair was swinging. Beside him, for Severus was there with him too, Severus softly said,
"Lily Evans, your mum."
And he didn't point out the small, pale boy who was watching her from across the way, but Harry saw him, and when Lily sailed off the swing and landed lightly on her feet, little Severus was there, an unsure smile on his face, and Harry had a sudden pang, wishing Severus had been his childhood friend instead of his mum's. His childhood hadn't been horrible, but it hadn't been happy. The memory of his father came from Sirius, who also provided a second from his parents' wedding day. Harry came back to Severus's office so often to see these memories that Severus finally told him no, advised him to take a break from the past and to start living again in the here and now.
"Move forward, Harry," he advised, putting the pensieve away in a locked cupboard. "It does not do to dwell in the past and forget to live."
And while Harry was fascinated by the brief glimpses he had been given of the parents he had never known, and he gobbled up every crumb he was given, his eye was always on Severus, too. He wasn't an 11-year-old orphan, staring at the ceiling of the great hall in somber wonder. He was past 20 now, fully grown, independent. He was looking outward, moving forward. And moving forward in Harry's mind involved getting to know Severus even better. If Severus wanted him to live, well, he'd certainly make a go of it. True, living, moving forward, always involved learning everything there was to know about magic. Magic, the intangible something that was filling up the hole in his life he hadn't really known was there, the emptiness inside him he'd never before been able to satisfy. He loved his lessons with Minerva, tolerated the magical history with Hermione, and found defense with Mad-Eye humbling and challenging. He'd have thought his military background would have prepared him better for one-on-ones with the X-Or. Learning the proper wand movement for something as simple as a jelly legs jinx was not difficult, but remembering which wand movement went with which incantation when Mad-Eye taught him 5 the first day and 6 more the next was nearly impossible. He had no trouble picking up apparition, though. It only took Severus telling him that he'd hide Hermione's copy of Hogwarts to History if Harry managed a successful apparition the first time. Harry had grinned cheekily and popped from one hoop to the other and back again, not even losing an eyelash. Mad-Eye demonstrated the unforgivables on spiders. Only because Harry had asked about the spell that had killed his parents, and Mad-Eye hadn't conferred with Severus first, hadn't asked his opinion or his permission. Mad-Eye showed me the killing curse today. Harry had slipped into Severus's office, as was his custom after training and before dinner. He usually showered first. Tonight he had not. He was wearing his training clothes, tracksuit bottoms and a sleeveless t-shirt, and his hair was damp with perspiration. He leaned against the wall beside the door, looking tired and vaguely upset. Severus looked up, hiding his surprise.
"Only the killing curse, or all of the unforgivables?"
he asked, studying Harry's face as he spoke.
"All of them," Harry said.
He pushed off the wall and sank heavily into the chair in front of Severus's desk. "As much as I like working with Mad-Eye, I can't take any more days like today." He rubbed his eyes under his glasses. "How could someone, anyone, get off on that, Severus?" He shuddered, and Severus reached into his desk drawer and pulled out a slab of Honeydukes chocolate. He unwrapped it and broke off a large chunk, then handed it to Harry.
"Eat."
Harry laughed. "Remus already tried giving me some. What is it with wizards and chocolate, anyway?" Nonetheless, he broke off a corner and popped it into his mouth, giving out a low hum of pleasure as the sweet melted in his mouth.
"Chocolate is medicinal," murmured Severus, pulling his eyes away as Harry licked chocolate off his lips. "It strengthens the magical core when evil is present. It can revive a wizard when..."
He paused, watching Harry pick up another piece of chocolate and put it halfway into his mouth, suck on it, then pull it out again.
"Would you please just eat the chocolate and stop making love to it?"
Harry looked from the chocolate in his hand to Severus, his face easing into a relaxed smile. "The chocolate does help," he said. He had Severus's full attention again, and slowly sucked the remaining piece into his mouth, then stood and walked around to work himself between Severus and his desk, standing in the V of his legs and wrapping his arms around Severus's shoulders. "Don't ask me to use any of those curses, Severus," he said. "I'm not sure I could, anyway." He sighed. "Well, I suppose I'd really have to be mad. Maybe find someone trying to take you down or something." He rested his chin on Severus's shoulder, then blew a chocolate breath across his neck and turned his head to kiss Severus's mouth. "Let's go back to my place," he said, releasing Severus's lips and tightening his arms. "Maybe watch the telly, get Indian takeout, try out my bed, have some privacy."
"You've forgotten the order meeting tonight," said Severus.
He pulled Harry closer to him, rubbed his chin over Harry's cheek. Harry, worked into a sweat, with a late afternoon growth of stubble on his face, wedged between Severus's body and the desk, was precisely what Severus needed at the end of a long and stressful day. Over the past couple of weeks, Severus had grown more and more, well, non-resistant, if not exactly welcoming, to his physical overtures. And with every kiss, every press of bodies, every grope against the wall, his resistance ebbed even more. The unexpected handjob had ended any real pretense of keeping the relationship strictly professional.
"Are you missing your home, or just wanting company in bed?" Severus asked.
Harry pulled back and stared at Severus, attempting to tell if he was serious. "I've been wanting your company in my bed for a while now," he said at last. "You know that."
"It will complicate things," said Severus.
He rubbed his chin on Harry's shoulder.
"The timing is abysmal. My focus must remain on the Order's mission."
"Remus and Sirius are together and no one knows," Harry said. "Separate bedrooms are not. They're in each other's arms every night and here for the Order all the time." He tucked a strand of dark hair behind Severus's ear. "Why they bother to keep it a secret is beyond me. You look like you'd use a night out of here, Severus. Why don't you come back to my flat with me after the meeting? Just for a bit. Let me check up on things, pick up my post and such." He grinned and leaned in to kiss the corner of Severus's mouth, speaking low as he did so. "Reward me for what I had to go through today with Mad-Eye."
"You watched him torture spiders. Ron Weasley will reward you as soon as he finds out."
"Ron?" Harry rested his head in the crook of Severus's neck, thinking that it was about a lot more than torturing spiders. "Why Ron? And I don't want that kind of reward from Ron anyway." He shuddered and Severus smirked.
"Ron Weasley is terrified of spiders. He is the frequent victim of practical jokes involving them."
"Ron isn't afraid of Harry trailed off, watching Severus. "He is? Really? That's good to know, you realize. Might give me an advantage next time I play chess with him."
"Even transfiguring your pawns into spiders may not help you beat Weasley at chess," Severus said.
He's just that good. Severus just looked at him. I'm just that bad.
A bit of both, said Severus. Now go clean up. You smell like a locker room.
That good, eh? Severus rolled his eyes. So you'll go to my place after the meeting?
Severus's arms tightened around Harry as Harry attempted to stand up.
If nothing comes up at the meeting that requires my immediate action, then yes, I will go with you. Lupin and Black will appreciate the privacy, I am sure.
I'll see you there, then. Harry pressed one last kiss to Severus's mouth, then slipped out of the room. The session with Mad-Eye, even though he wasn't the one performing the curses, had drained him, though the chocolate and the brief time with Severus had helped. He needed to talk with Severus again about this training. Training to kill wasn't exactly new to him. He'd been in the service until his accident, after all. And while the Avada Kedavra was chilling, the Cruciatus was almost worse. If watching someone use these curses on spiders could take so much out of him, what did they expect would happen if he trained his wand on an enemy? It drained him, body and soul. Soul. A year ago, even a month ago, he'd have scoffed at the idea of having a soul. Religious bunk. Aunt Petunia's ideas of fire and brimstone and eternal damnation for everyone, anyone who was the least bit different. Different like him. Different from the very beginning. And all these years he had thought she hated him because he was queer. But since coming here, since holding his wand, since having his leg healed, since finding himself wrapped in a cocoon of feeling, he felt like he'd been turned inside out, exposing his, well, his soul. He couldn't explain it. It made no sense. But something had awakened inside him, something that threatened to reshape everything he knew about himself. Except, perhaps, for one thing. He still liked men, and fortunately, having magic didn't make anyone less of a man. Not even Severus. Especially not Severus. The meeting was short. Reports from Arthur Weasley and Kingsley, who along with Ron still worked at the Ministry. The liaison with the Muggle government had been recalled, a Muggle obliviation team sent to Downing Street. In Diagon Alley in Hogsmeade, stricter operating hours had been imposed, more rigorous curfews established, more shops closed down, more restrictions on the sale of magical items. Reports from Minerva, who had received new orders regarding Huffbloods. They would be removed from their homes earlier, at the age of 6, and sent to special formative magical schools where the influence of their Muggle parent would be mitigated. I was forced to provide a list to the Ministry of Muggle-born magical children in the Great Book, Minerva reported at last. The mistakes, or so I am told. She looked around the room somberly. I do not know what will happen to those children. Arguments. Fist pounding on the table, opinions, end it now, draw him out, how much longer can we wait? Severus silenced them.
With the help of Minerva, I have spoken with Albus's portrait, he began, holding up a hand to silence the exclamations from the assembled order members. We begin by killing the snake, he said, voice commanding their attention. These are Albus's orders. We must use a goblin-forged blade to behead it. The snake must be dead before we attempt to kill Voldemort.
It was not a short meeting, and it did not end well. There were senior order members who had sewage and plans to set in motion. Minerva was understandably distraught, and no one believed the snake could be taken out without Voldemort's knowledge. Harry gave it up after waiting for more than an hour after the official meeting had ended, and had made his way outside to the small back garden, where Sirius sometimes smoked, and where Severus grew a few herbs and vegetables. He sat on the ancient garden glider for 15 minutes, thinking. This madman, this monster, had killed his parents. He had tried to kill Harry. He had murdered innocent people, imposed an ethnic cleansing of sorts upon the wizarding world. Harry had been told this. He believed it. He believed Voldemort was a menace to the world and would set his sights on more than the control and domination of magical Europe. And these people, his new friends, were determined to eradicate him, to stop his reign of terror. These people who had seen something different, something better, who had lived a life full of magic, who had gone to Hogwarts and known they were witches and wizards all their lives, or at least from the time they were 10 or 11 years old, this mattered to them. Their worlds were bigger than number 12 Grimmauld Place. Yet it was all still so new to him. He took his wand out of his pocket and held it, feeling, as he always did when he held it, a comforting surge of warmth and power. He rested his hand on his healed leg, thought about the godfather he hadn't known he'd had, about the image memories of his parents, the animated photographs of their wedding and that Sirius and Remus had shared with him. He'd always wanted to know them, of course, but he'd gone on for 20 years thinking they died in a car crash. He'd grown up, suffered through life at the Dursleys, then left, making his own future with no help from them and not looking back. He wished he could end it all for the Order. He wished he cared enough for vengeance to sneak up on the bastard and take him out from behind, or that he was confident enough with his wand to confront him face to face, that he cared more about the future of the Wizarding World than he did about his own life, his own future. He checked his watch and sighed. Because right about now, what he cared most about was getting Severus alone, then getting him in bed. Fuck. He was tired of waiting. He gripped his wand tighter. He felt welcome here, needed. He was beginning to feel like he was part of some kind of oddball family, even. Sirius truly loved him, in his awkward, teenage, backslabbing, no, not me, I'm not gay, sort of way. Remus was like a kind of gentle uncle. Hermione already like a trusted sister, and Ron becoming something of a best mate. He had no idea what a grandmother would be like, and he hesitated to assign Minerva into that category, but she seemed delighted to work with him. She pushed him hard, was proud of how much he'd learned already, and though her situation was intolerable, always walking that thin line between Voldemort-controlled ministry she served and the Order of the Phoenix that was determined to overthrow it, she didn't hurry him because her need was so great. Everyone in the Order had the utmost respect for her, and Harry was certainly attached to her already. She genuinely cared about him and put his needs ahead of the Order's. She shared his small triumphs and encouraged him when he failed at the task she'd given him. And Severus... Severus hadn't told anyone about the Horcruxes. It was impossible to think of himself as carrying around a piece of someone else's soul, especially someone as evil as Voldemort. But he hadn't believed in souls before, and no matter how much navel-gazing he did now, he couldn't find anything in his past that worried him or that made him think he was evil in any way at all. If he did have a piece of that soul inside him, it was merely a hitchhiker, holding on until it was needed elsewhere. He preferred to just believe it wasn't there. Old Al was wrong. He had to be. Harry... He turned to see Ron standing in the doorway. Severus says he's going to be a while. He asked me to let you know. He and my dad are talking now. Harry hid the disappointment he felt. Right. Thanks, Ron. We were wondering, though, you want to come to the Burrow tomorrow and learn how to ride a broom? Fly? Really? Harry knew that the Weasleys called their home the Burrow, and that the house and grounds were magically hidden. He got up to follow Ron back inside. Do you have a broom I can use? Severus wasn't forgotten, but the long-awaited promise of learning to fly on a broom took the edge off the disappointment. By the time Severus got to the Burrow for the noon meeting with Arthur and Bill, Harry had died and gone to heaven. Metaphorically speaking, of course. "The boy can fly," said Arthur, pointing toward the pitch. Severus had had to perform a complicated set of unwarding spells to gain access to the property, and had then answered Arthur's identification questions with the other man's wand pointed between his eyes. Severus lifted his eyes and watched the Quidditch pitch until he picked out Harry. The boy could fly. Hardly a boy, he reminded himself, and it was certainly not surprising that he'd be at home on a broom. He's a natural, Severus. They've been having seeker duels. He's giving Jenny a run for her money. She's home this weekend. Severus heard the pride in his voice. Jenny Weasley, Arthur's youngest child and only daughter, was the seeker for the Holyhead Harpies, a professional Quidditch team. Severus watched the play for another minute or two, grimacing when Harry dropped into a simple faint, then slipped into the house with Arthur. "He's nothing like I would have imagined him," said Bill Weasley an hour later as they sat at the kitchen table. "Polite as anything, and still so muggle. He seems to accept and embrace magic, but never thinks to actually use it for anything practical." "Poor boy. I do imagine he's had a lot of fun in his life," added Molly, taking a seat next to Severus. "He's a looker, isn't he?" Severus didn't comment. "I can't imagine what he's supposed to do," said Arthur a moment later. "Did Albus leave you a clue, Severus? Any clue at all?" Severus shook his head, but didn't meet Arthur's eyes as he responded. "Nothing. He simply believes that only Harry can kill Voldemort, as was prophesied." "Frankly, I don't know how we can expect him to do that either," said Bill. "This isn't his war, no matter what the prophecy says." We have the element of surprise if nothing else, Arthur said. The Dark Lord doesn't know he's alive. Perhaps that can be used to some advantage. Severus shook his head.
We would have only one chance to surprise him. We must have a plan first, and we must take great care to make sure it's a good plan, a plan that will work, and we can do nothing until the snake is dead.
The snake is with him at all times, Severus, Arthur said with a shudder. No one can get close to the snake without being in his presence. It would be suicide to try to get close enough to behead it.
It has to be a blade, Severus? Asked Molly. Perhaps poison?
He shook his head. Albus was most insistent. The snake has some sort of power that can only be vanquished by a goblin-made blade.
He looked at Bill, who nodded. Gripbook has agreed to lend us two, he said, a sword and a long knife. He sighed. For a price, of course.
There is always a price with goblins, said Severus. What has he demanded?
Bill exchanged a glance with Molly, who looked away.
Aunt Muriel's goblin-made tiara, he answered. It would have been passed down to Mum.
Severus looked across to Molly, but she resolutely nodded.
It's only an old piece of jewelry, she said, not too convincingly. I'd never wear it anyway.
Thank you, Molly, said Severus, leaving it at that.
The snake has to be killed before the Dark Lord, mused Arthur. But can they both be killed in the same battle? We won't get two chances, Severus. It will be hard enough to engineer one.
The front door banged open just then, and the Quidditch players came in, talking and laughing loudly. The conversation in the kitchen ended.
Gin Weasley came in first and sat down next to Bill. She was even taller and more athletic than Severus remembered her.
He's unbelievable, she said. I can't believe he's never been on a broom before. We'd have had the House Cup every year with him on the Gryffindor team.
Assuming he would have sorted into Gryffindor, Miss Weasley, Severus stated, looking past her to where Harry stood in the doorway.
He was flushed and wind-blown and looked as happy as Severus had ever seen him. Everyone laughed.
Oh, he'd have been at Gryffindor, said Ginny, smiling over at Harry and winking.
Harry grinned back at her, then squeezed in beside her on the bench. Ginny whispered something into his ear, and he blushed.
Severus frowned.
Ron brought out Butterbeer for all, and Harry, who had already developed a taste for the stuff at Grimald Place, quickly downed his. When Ron asked him to come up to see his old bedroom upstairs and meet the ghoul in the attic, Ginny excused herself and followed them out of the room. Severus frowned again.
How is training going, Severus?
Severus looked at the doorway, then back at Arthur.
Slow and steady, answered Severus. Minerva reports that he picks up charms and transfiguration easily, and has little trouble with the tasks she sets him. I think she has established a reasonable pace. They're progressing through first-year charms and transfiguration quickly, and have already started on second-year work.
And defense? Arthur persisted. Severus glanced up at the ceiling. Something up there was making a great deal of noise. He heard feet pounding and laughter and the squeak of a bed.
It's just the kids, Molly said. I left Ron's room just like it was, orange paint and all.
He's learning the individual defensive and offensive spells without a problem, answered Severus, turning back to look at Arthur. Dueling, however, is another matter. While he can perform the spells he's learned accurately, he can't yet duel with any success.
I should think not, said Molly.
She looked up as a few specks of plaster fell onto the table from the ceiling, but otherwise paid the commotion upstairs no mind.
Dueling requires that you be able to predict your opponent's spell before it's cast, and defend yourself against it while thinking of your next offensive move. It isn't a discipline for beginners.
He may be new at magic, but he's not 11, Fred put in. He and George were standing in the doorway now, listening to the conversation.
Case in point, he took to the broom like he was born on it.
You should have him duel someone other than Mad-Eye, suggested George.
Yeah, someone who doesn't have a creepy magical eye that can look right through to the pants you've been wearing for 3 days, added Fred.
Though Moody's missing part of his nose, just like
enough.
Severus held up his hand and George wisely shut his mouth.
Point taken. Next Friday morning, Harry will duel you. First and second year spells and jinxes only.
George grinned and exchanged a conspiratorial look with his twin. Severus would have commented on it, but a particularly high-pitched squeal was heard from upstairs, followed by pounding footsteps on the stairs.
"Give it back! Jenny!"
Ginny ran into the kitchen and round to the back of the table, where she ducked behind her father as Harry skidded to a halt behind the twins, who moved into the room and took seats at the table. He looked too disheveled for Severus's liking. He shot a menacing look toward the Weasley girl.
"Give him back his wallet, Ginny," sighed Arthur. "For a nearly 20-year-old woman, you sometimes act like a schoolgirl."
Ginny grinned and tossed the wallet toward Harry. He caught it in one hand and pocketed it. Severus stood.
"I told Harry I'd take him back to his flat to check up on things," he said. "Harry, are you ready?"
"I thought you said you had no plans this evening," said Ron.
Harry, however, was already saying his goodbyes. A few moments later, he was hurrying after Severus toward the gate. Severus unwarded it, then stepped out past the apparition boundary with Harry and held out his arm.
"I think I can do it myself this time," said Harry.
Severus kept his arm out expectantly and did not comment. They reappeared in the middle of Harry's sitting room seconds later. Severus didn't give him time even to turn on the lights.
"You should not lead her on," he stated, catching Harry as he stumbled over the coffee table.
"Lead her on?"
Harry headed into the kitchen and opened the refrigerator. He took out the milk, opened the carton, and smelled it, making a face.
"Yes, lead her on. You know what I'm talking about."
Severus followed Harry into the kitchen and watched him pour a half gallon of milk down the sink.
"She has 5 older brothers, Harry. You do not want to get on their bad side."
Harry looked up at him.
"Bad side? Severus, what are you talking about?"
Severus frowned. Harry dropped the empty milk jug into the sink and grinned.
"You're jealous," he said.
"You're jealous because you think I was flirting with Ron's sister."
"You were flirting with her, and I am not jealous. I am simply warning you not to do anything rash."
"Rash? Like what?"
Harry had opened the refrigerator again and had taken out a container of leftover takeaway, and was shoveling that, too, down the sink.
"Like wrestling in bed with her. We could all hear the squeaking, Harry, down in the kitchen. At one point, flakes of plaster from the ceiling actually fell down onto the table. You should not lead her on. She does not necessarily know you prefer your own sex."
"Oh, she knows," said Harry, grinning again. "She's quite bright, really, Severus, and she's not interested in me." Severus folded his arms.
"Not interested in you?"
He raised a single eyebrow. "I love when you do that," said Harry. "You really ought to teach me sometime." He leaned across the table and traced Severus's eyebrow with his thumb, then tugged once on his earlobe. Severus grabbed his wrist.
"You're a tease."
"Ginny doesn't seem to have any reservations about taking things fast," Harry said. "I only met her today, and already I know her birthday, her favorite color, and what flavor lip gloss she prefers."
"January 9th, black, none, and I'd better not taste any on you."
The kiss was not gentle. Severus was beside him in 2 strides and had him backed against the counter in 1 more. Harry hummed in approval as Severus pressed against him and kissed him with purpose, working his mouth with lips and tongue in a claiming, possessive kiss. He groaned as Harry returned the kiss, gripping Severus's hips, then moving one hand back to caress Severus's ass through the unfamiliar black robes.
"You're hiding your best asset," Harry said, moving his mouth to Severus's jaw, then kissing his neck.
He moaned as Severus pulled his head up and attacked his mouth, framing his face with long-fingered hands, then working one of them lower on Harry's neck, his shoulder, caressing his collarbone under the t-shirt he'd worn to learn to fly.
"My ass is bony and hard," he said.
He pressed against Harry with his groin, twisting his hips so that Harry felt his erection against his hip and thigh.
"It is not my best asset."
"Guess I like hard asses," murmured Harry as Severus sucked on his collarbone, working a hand up under Harry's shirt.
Severus grazed his fingers over a nipple, testing Harry's response. When Harry groaned and pressed forward into him, Severus's fingers returned, rubbing the nub with his thumb, then pinching it lightly.
"Fuck, Severus, I'm going to have to make you jealous more often."
"I'm not jealous,"
said Severus, continuing his assault. He pulled at the bottom of Harry's shirt and helped work it over Harry's head, letting it drop onto the floor.
"Possessive, then," breathed Harry, resting his hands on the counter behind him now as Severus brought his lips to his chest and sucked lightly on one nipple. "Fuck, Severus, that's good."
He rolled his hips, not caring that the countertop was cutting into his ass.
"I like possessive."
Severus released the nipple and blew lightly across it. returning his mouth to Harry's as Harry shuddered.
Bed? Severus said into Harry's ear, just before he latched onto the sensitive earlobe and laved it.
They made it to the living room before Severus had Harry pressed against the wall beside the fireplace, kissing him again, groaning as Harry wrapped a leg around the back of his thighs to draw him even closer, fumbling blindly with the long row of buttons as Severus kissed him again, assaulting his mouth, then gently removing his glasses and kissing one eyelid, then the other, then claiming his mouth again, smiling through Harry's efforts to undo the buttons.
"Is there a spell for making someone naked?" Harry asked, giving up on the buttons and working his hand down to feel Severus's hard length, palming it, squeezing the tip just enough to make Severus's knees buckle.
"It is a highly guarded secret," said Severus. "If children learned it, they would use it on each other, and it would be impossible to keep anyone dressed in Hogwarts."
Harry smiled. "I'd have used it on my professors."
"You first."
They paused once more in the doorway of Harry's bedroom to kiss, more languidly this time, with Harry's arms around Severus's neck. He towed his shoes off as they kissed, allowed Severus to unfasten his jeans, then somehow made it to the bed. Harry pushed Severus down, knelt on the floor and pulled off his boots and socks, then regarded the strange clothing, not knowing where to start. "No trousers," he said, looking up at Severus in surprise. He grinned.
"Do all wizards..." "Too much talking," growled Severus. "It is summer, Harry. I wear trousers in the colder weather."
"I suppose I should tell you now that Ginny Weasley's gay, seeking for her own team, as Ron says. She's got a full-time girlfriend and a drawer full of strap-ons."
"All right, Ron told me that part. I have no idea what's in her drawers."
He grinned at his own joke.
"What did I say about too much talking?" growled Severus.
But he smirked, and Harry scooted closer and began to properly undo the remaining buttons, then pushed the robes from Severus's shoulders and worked them off his body, leaving him in black boxes.
"Stand,"
said Severus, voice low and commanding. He motioned to Harry, and Harry stood slowly, biting back a smile. Severus pointed to his jeans.
"Off."
Harry pulled the jeans off his hips, wincing as they grazed his cock. He stepped out of them, and Severus nodded at the tight briefs.
"Go on."
A moment later, Severus's hand was sliding over Harry's cock. Then the hand clamped down and pulled him forward as Severus leaned back, and Harry was straddling Severus on the bed, his cock bobbing over Severus's head and... Fuck! Severus took it in his mouth, fondling the bollocks with one hand, the other already kneading his ass, fingers working inward to run over his crease as that mouth pulled him in. He was sure he was going to pass out. The pressure was exquisite, the position divine. On his knees, knees that worked on a leg that was strong, he was in control, could press down into Severus's mouth, could pull back and give him just the head, just the tip. He was fucking Severus's mouth, and it was utterly perfect, utterly right. Severus had pulled pillows over to raise his head, and the hand that was working Harry's bollocks was suddenly on his ass, joining the other and kneading, and caressing. One finger teased over his hole, and he nearly came as it returned, a gentle press, questing inward only a fraction before retreating, returning to the teasing slide. When it returned again, it was more deliberate, and the slight press inward came with a sudden tightening of the suction on his cock, a hand returning to his bollocks, pressing against his perineum. Severus swallowed his cock then, until the head was tight in the back of his throat, and the finger pressed in a fraction more, and it was too much, too good, too perfect. Harry came with a strangled cry, felt the fingers pressing into his hole against his perineum, the mouth tightly around him, swallowing his release as he shuddered and nearly collapsed atop Severus. But Severus was rolling him over now, lying on top of him, holding him, but not letting him rest, not yet.
"I was a fool to wait for this," Severus said, breathing into his throat and kissing him there, over his Adam's apple, on the soft nape of his neck. "You are exquisite. Delicious."
He fastened lips on Harry's nipple as Harry arched up under him at the sensation, rubbed his demanding erection, straining against the elastic of his boxers, into the V of Harry's legs. They lay together, Severus rocked slowly against him, moving his lips from one pebbled nipple to the other, dipping down to probe at his navel, kiss the fading scars of his past life. He was slow and deliberate now, waiting for Harry to recover, and far sooner than Harry imagined was possible, he was moaning again, moaning as Severus laved his nipple, blew over it, bit down on it again. Moaning as his cock, impossibly, began to harden as Severus rolled his bollocks. So sex is the same for wizards as muggles? Harry asked as Severus ran his hands down his sides, his hips, trailed fingers lightly over his treasure trail. Severus smiled.
We have at our disposal certain spells for cleansing, lubrication, relaxation. I could give you a magical cock ring, depilate your genitalia with a whispered word.
He pressed Harry's hands down against the mattress on either side of his head, pushed them up until his fingers grazed the headboard.
I could bind your hands magically to the headboard, restrain you with a petrification spell that would allow you to feel but not move. I could magically raise the head of the bed, or the foot, engorge a pillow or two.
Beneath him, Harry had become quiet. Oh. He swallowed, then gripped Severus's hands tightly and raised his head a bit to nuzzle Severus's neck.
Is that all? He asked, breathless.
Illicit potion use. Polyjuice, to change your body into that of another while retaining your own mind.
I'm going to like being a wizard, aren't I?
Severus laughed. You're going to like being a wizard even without the sex, he said.
He rolled Harry over then and settled on his back, kissing his shoulders, working his mouth over Harry's spine, nipping at the top of his buttocks, then fumbling in the drawer beside the bed for the lube and condoms, slipping out of his boxes and shifting Harry up on his knees. He took his time preparing him, trying not to think, as he did so, about how long it had been since he'd had sex, how long it had been since he'd even thought about it.
You are comfortable? Your leg?
I'm fine. Perfect. This is... God, yes, this is perfect, Severus. And then he was on Harry again, pressing into him slowly, taking his time as the muscles gave way, waiting for Harry to adjust, then pressing in further. It was exquisite. The tightness, the grip, the smooth slide. Harry moaning, beginning to press back against him, encouraging him with words.
There. Right there, again. Christ, Severus. More. I can take more. I'm not going to break.
Pushing back against him.
Harder. Yes. There. Right. There. Fuck.
The last word, long, drawn out. Each word a promise, a benediction, a plea. Making love to Harry Potter on Harry Potter's bed in his muggle flat in London, with the bedside clock radio flashing 12 o'clock, and a reading lamp, and a small television set, dusty and quiet. Harry Potter alive, moving beneath him, wanting him. Severus Snape, wanting Harry Potter. He stopped thinking, concentrated on the feel of the young man beneath him, the grip of the arse around his cock, the tension of the smooth back, the litany of low-voiced words, of praise, of encouragement, of raw feeling. He pressed into the hilt, a smooth, sure glide, pulled out quickly, and then hammered home again. He saw nothing but stars. Stars behind his eyelids, stars in the beads of sweat on Harry's back, stars on Harry's lips when, both of them sated, he kissed them once again, stars in Harry's languid, sex-sated eyes as they stared at each other. Stars and magic, and Harry Potter, asleep in his arms.